Check, check. Hello, it's Trent Reinsmith, and this is the UFC Vegas 38 post-fight wrap-up, or whatever you want to call it, for the Thiago Santos versus Johnny Walker fight card. As always, going to start off going over what happened outside the cage that was noticeable to me. And a lot happened outside the cage at UFC Vegas 38. The first thing and most important thing I want to address is the decision to make the no contest call in the Dacus versus Holland fight. I'm not really concerned about the call. Looking over the rules, it looks like the call was made correctly. It was a weird situation, played out in a way that not really favorable to anyone. So I think as written, the rules, which are vague, and I will cover this later, I think the right call was made. But my concern, and I think the concern of everyone involved with this, should be with how the decision was made and how it played out and what we saw in the discussion before the decision was made. So what we saw was that Mark Ratner and Sean Shelby, UFC executives, were involved with how it all played out. To what extent, I'm not sure. But at some point, when the UFC broadcast cut to the camera and the discussion, all eyes were on Shelby. Ratner was kind of on the outside, but all eyes were on Shelby as he spoke to Dan Margliotta and Herb Dean. And there was an NSAC official there as well. Now, that should be a topic of discussion, because the UFC should have not even been near the Nevada State Athletic Commission officials, including Dean and Margliotta, while this decision was being made or talked about or even looked at in the replay, because the decision is totally with the Nevada State Athletic Commission. Once the UFC gets involved in any way, things become suspicious. Now, I'm not saying that the UFC influenced anyone's decision here. What I am saying is the look is terrible. The UFC cannot be involved with that, can't even be around it. It needs to remove itself whenever these things happen. If there's ever a discussion as far as a fight result, the UFC should not be involved or even near that topic. But what we saw here was Ratner was there, and Shelby was the focus of the conversation. Sean Shelby should not have been there. Mark Ratner should not have been there. It should have been the NSA officials, Herb Dean, who I guess was the outside official looking at the replay, Dan Margliotta, who was the official inside the cage. Those people should have been the only ones there. The UFC should not have been involved at all. If I'm Dacus, I want an explanation as to why the UFC was involved, because they shouldn't have been. That's not to say that I think Dacus should get the win. That's not to say that I believe anything nefarious happened. What I am saying is the UFC should not have been anywhere near that conversation. So it was there. It was involved. Anytime this happens going forward, the commission needs to tell the UFC officials to back off and that they will handle it, because it is the officials' rule. It's up to the NSAC, any athletic commission, to make that ruling. UFC or any other promotion should not be involved at all. So this was a terrible look. I would hope the NSAC addresses it. I doubt the UFC will address it, because why would they address anything? But no, the UFC should not have been involved. The Mark Smith stoppage in the Young vs. Egger fight was questionable at best. He seemed to stop the fight incredibly quickly, and for no real reason. I guess you could argue that Young was not fighting back, but that argument doesn't really fly. I think Smith stopped the fight terribly early, and I think that either the Nevada State Athletic Commission or Smith should answer as to why that fight was stopped so early. And I say this as someone who thinks that fights need to be stopped earlier than they are. So if I'm saying a fight was stopped early, it was stopped incredibly early and egregiously early. And I think this was one of those cases. Significant strikes. The number of significant strikes in a fight seemed to be a focus of Cormier and Fitzgerald on the commentary team, and I don't know why. They seem obsessed with the number of significant strikes that were thrown and landed, as if that has some kind of implication in the scoring of a fight. It does not. The reason the judges don't get any information on the number of strikes thrown or landed in a round is because the number of strikes thrown or landed in a round don't have any bearing on the scoring of the fight. The result of those strikes do. The impact of the strikes, the damage of the strikes, those things are important in the scoring. If you want to talk striking, talk about the effect of the striking, not the numbers of the striking. It's distracting. It makes people believe the scoring might be wrong. It's just something that the UFC commentary team needs to avoid discussing. Now, you can present these numbers, and I think John Anik does a good job of doing this. You can present the numbers, or here are the numbers. They don't have any effect on the scoring. Anik does a good job of giving context to things. Some of the other commentators do not. Cormier and Fitzgerald did not do a good job of that on Saturday. Thiago Santos, after his win, said in the post-fight interview in the cage with Daniel Cormier, hey, Dana, Mick, let's renew my contract, please. It's my last fight. Let's renew and give me a little bit more money, please. That's not a good look. This is a former UFC title challenger. He shouldn't have to more or less beg for money in a post-fight interview. We know the discussion of UFC fighter pay is ongoing. We know the UFC gives its fighters less than 20% of the revenue. We know the UFC fighters, top to bottom, are underpaid. This is just another example of how badly the fighters are underpaid when someone has to go out there after fighting for a title and losing to John Jones via split decision and beg for a raise. Not a good look. But again, this is not something I think will... I don't think this is the last time we're going to see this. The UFC has its way. It'll be the last time we see it. But the reality is, unless the pay goes up substantially, this is not going to be the last time we see it. To stick on that pay structure, the show pay structure that the UFC uses is broken. We know that. We know that it's used as some kind of false motivation. And the reason it shows up as broken in UFC Vegas 38 is that neither Kevin Holland nor Gadalkas are going to get a win bonus for the fight that ended in a no contest. If they do, it will be because the UFC opted to give that to them more than it is required to give that to them. So the show and win structure needs to go away. Should be one flat rate. No one is more motivated if in a fight because of the show and win structure. It's a joke. It's a falsehood that's perpetrated on everyone. And the reason the UFC loves it is because it saves money by doing so. Needs to go away. And this was another example of why it needs to go away. Now, to go back to the first topic of this, the Nevada State Athletic Commission and the UFC and the replay rules. The replay rules are vague, and I think they were vague because there's not really an example of, you know, this happened and then this was the result and then this was what we can do. Well, now the Nevada State Athletic Commission has a clear blueprint of what it can write for the instant replay rules and how the rules can be applied in an event where a fight ending sequence began with a unintentional foul, which is what happened here on Saturday night. There was an unintentional clash of the heads, literally knocked Kevin Holland out. He came to, kept fighting, and then Dacus got the submission. But the finish could be directly traced to that clash of heads because it put Holland in a bad spot. No, the fighters are not to blame for this. Dacus is not to blame for continuing to fight because you are trained to continue to fight till the referee tells you to stop fighting. Holland showed, I don't know what he showed, but he showed that he has the ability to come back from being knocked out cold and stay in a fight, which is impressive. But the real thing that should come out of this is clear and concise writing on this is what happens in Nevada, because they're one of the few states that allows instant replay. This is what happens in Nevada if a fight-ending sequence begins with an unintentional foul that the referee misses when it happens and gets caught on instant replay. So hopefully the NSAC uses this as a learning experience, uses this as a blueprint, and follows through and goes forward with creating clear and concise language in the instant replay rules. I'm going to talk about the fights now. Douglas Silva de Andrade could not have timed his knockout left hook better than he did. His opponent went for a kick when he was swinging his body to land that kick. Andrade came with a perfectly timed and placed left hook and just starched him. It was a beautiful, beautiful knockout, impressive in every way, but kind of scary that Andrade said that they tried this technique in the locker room. And hopefully they stopped in the locker room before Andrade actually, you know, knocked somebody out cold. So I was very impressed with his timing on that and the amount of power he got in that short left hook. Very good win from Andrade on that. Jamie Mullarkey is someone to keep an eye on. He's in the lightweight division. He has two stoppage wins in a row. His fight did not start out well for him against Devontae Smith on Saturday, but he recovered and made the fight gritty, made the fight dirty, and when he did so, he totally took over the fight and got himself a knockout. So Mullarkey is, I think he's pretty young, but he's definitely someone in the unranked fighters in the lightweight division that you need to watch. He's a fun fighter. He's definitely someone to keep an eye on, and with two knockouts in a row, someone that I will not miss his next fight, that's for sure. Carol Rosa was a huge favorite over Betch Cahera, and she used a nice arsenal of striking techniques to get the win. I don't think she's going to move up the rankings with this win, because Cahera was not ranked. And Rosa was ranked number 15. It was a great performance. She looked good. She was, like I said, a huge favorite, dominated the fight, showed good striking techniques, and especially her knees, which she would be able to use to set up some other techniques to the head later in fights, just because they were so impactful and they had Cahera dropping her guard to protect her body. Well, protect her body, leave the head open. I think Rosa will get a ranked opponent in her next outing, and she should. Someone to watch, and definitely a good performance for her. She was expected to win. She dominated and looked good in doing so. Cahera's career ended, her UFC career ended with a whimper. She once fought for the bantamweight title, someone who kind of got by on grit and determination more than skill. For sure, but not the way I don't think that anyone would want their UFC career to end, being dominated and also missing weight in their final fight. Casey O'Neill, she didn't look good on her feet, but what she did well was get the fight to the clinch and then use that clinch to get the fight to the ground. And once on the ground, Casey O'Neill dominated. Very good ground and pound, very heavy top game on the mat. Impressive win. She's just 23. She's 8-0, still developing. The downside with O'Neill, I think, is that the lack of depth in the flyweight division may force the UFC matchmakers to move her up quicker than she should be. I hope that doesn't happen. I hope she's allowed to develop a little more, get her striking skills improved a little more, become a more well-rounded fighter. She's definitely a good fighter, but she needs to work on some more fundamentals before she moves up in the rankings. but a really good win, a really good performance on the mat from Casey O'Neill. But again, just 23, so someone to watch. Alexander Hernandez got a nice knockout win over here at Mike Breeden. He was a huge favorite. I don't want to take anything away from Hernandez, what he did. He did what he was supposed to do. He came in, dominated a fighter that was signed to take the bout less than a week before the fight card, came in overweight. Breeden was more or less someone just there to allow Hernandez just to fight. So what impressed me about Hernandez was his post-fight interview. I remember him. He was very cocky when he first came to the UFC, and rightfully so. He was racking up wins with ease when he did when he came to the UFC, dominated, and he was just full of himself. He was a young kid that was full of himself, and I think he's experienced some loss now in his career, and he knows that things aren't going to come easy for him. And that has humbled him a little bit. So his post-fight interview was what impressed me most about Alexander Hernandez. Very mature, showed growth, mental growth in his approach to the fight game, approach to his opponents, approach to his career. And if he's headed down that path now and is kind of seen, you know, this isn't as easy as it looked at first. If I want to move up, I have to be mature in every way and focused in every way. That is really what I took away from this fight for Alexander Hernandez, was his maturity and growth as a person and as a fighter in the post-fight interview. So I was very impressed with Hernandez's interview. Like I said, looked good in getting the win, dominated a person that was more or less there just so Hernandez did not have to not fight on a card after his original opponent backed out. Kevin Holland and Kyle Daukaus, the outcome was strange, was unsatisfying. Hopefully they run this back for the sake of both of them. What I liked about this was the way they both kept fighting. Very impressed that Holland, who was knocked out cold, got back in the fight after being knocked out, and that Daukaus just kept fighting until the referee pulled him off. He didn't really pause. He knew what he had to do, and he jumped on his opponent when his opponent was hurt, which is what you're supposed to do. I have no problem with how either of these men fought. My only issue is in with the way the no contest was handled, and my issue with that is not with the Nevada State Athletic Commission's officials, but with the fact that the UFC was involved. So I hope Holland and Daukaus both get paid in full. I don't think they will. And I hope for their sakes that they are able to run this fight back and that neither of them have any lasting effects from that unintentional clash of the heads, especially Holland, who did go out. So that was concerning. Johnny Walker. I'm trying to wrap my head around this Johnny Walker thing. And in one way, I'm impressed with what SBG Ireland did with Johnny Walker. They took a raw, maybe over-exuberant fighter and made him a more technical fighter. But in doing so, they also, I think, reduced his effectiveness as a fighter. And I don't know what Johnny Walker is going to do after this fight. He was criticized online for his performance. A lot of people were bummed out that they didn't get to see the crazy Johnny Walker that they have gotten used to. But let's not forget, the crazy Johnny Walker also has a couple of losses after three knockout wins. And so maybe he does need to be a little more technical if he wants to have a longer and more upward career. I don't know. This is the thing that Johnny Walker is going to have to figure out. Does he want to be the fan-friendly fighter who is just crazy going out there doing weird techniques and maybe getting a knockout or maybe getting knocked out? Or does he want to be a more technical fighter and work his way towards the title in that manner? Or does he want to combine those two in an effective way? If I was him, I would try and combine them. I don't know if SBG Ireland is the right camp for that. I don't know if, after all the criticism that Walker is going to hear, and he will hear a lot, if he's going to stick with SBG Ireland. I do know that if I'm just looking at this as a technical improvement, yeah, they did a good job in technically improving Johnny Walker as a fighter. Was that to his detriment, though? I think only Walker can answer that. In my opinion, he needed to be a lot more active, maybe take some more chances than he did, maybe use his length more effectively. But there's skills there. But now Walker, I think, maybe got a little bit too much into his own head in this fight, and that had some effect on him. I don't know for sure. Maybe he tries another camp with SBG Ireland and see how that goes against hopefully another ranked opponent. And if it works, well, there's tweaks that they can make. If it doesn't work, well, maybe Walker needs to have a little more freedom to not fight in such a constrained manner. Some fighters are just not good at doing that. Johnny Walker looked like he has the skills, but I don't know if he has the mindset to do that. And that's something that he is going to have to answer for himself. But there was good and bad for what SBG Ireland did here with Johnny Walker. I'm not going to say that it was right or wrong. I will say that he looked different. He looked tentative. He looked like he was in his own head. But he also looked like a better technical fighter. So maybe there has to be kind of a middle ground here for Johnny Walker. I'm not sure. Thiago Santos is in a spot. He's fought out of his UFC contract. Yes, he got a win after three consecutive losses, but he's 37, I think. And now the UFC has to look at Thiago Santos and say, is this a fighter we want to re-sign? Is this a fighter who is going to be able to contend for the light heavyweight title again? And I don't know if he is. He just does not seem to be the same fighter he was before he fought John Jones. That might be a mental thing. That might be a physical thing, because we know that his legs were jacked up after that fight and he had to get some surgeries. And maybe at his age, he just can't recover from that surgery effectively. Maybe it's a combination. I don't know. But I don't know if Thiago Santos, because he's probably making a decent amount of money, is going to be re-signed by the UFC. If he is, he might have to take a pay cut. But if the UFC is looking at this as is this guy going to be a future title challenger? I don't think Santos answered that question in the fight on Saturday. Had he gone out and starched Johnny Walker? Had he gone out and thrown a shutout on the scorecards against Johnny Walker? Had he looked threatening in any real substantial way? Maybe Santos would be more likely to get re-signed. I just don't see it here. Would I like to see him stay with the UFC? Yeah. Would I like to see him explore free agency and see if he can get a better payday somewhere else? Sure. It sounds like he wants to stay with the UFC, though. So if that's the case, then he should. But if there's offers out there and they are going to offer him more than the UFC is going to offer him, he 100% should take those offers. He's at an age now where he has to worry more about income and future than he would be if he was in his early 20s. So he's 37. Anyway, you cut it, he's getting close to the end of his career. And so now is the time where the best offer monetarily might be the one that Thiago Santos should take. But again, I'm not even sure if the UFC is going to offer him anything, just because I don't know if he is looked at as a potential title challenger or potential champion at this point in his career by the UFC. And that's a wrap, I think, on the UFC Vegas 38 fight card. And I will be back later this week. I'm going to have hopefully some things to talk about. I really want to do a deep dive into the whole John Jones arrest thing and everything around it. Give some more opinion on that. So if I get the time, I'll have that either Monday or Tuesday. But definitely be back sometime next this coming week. So until then, everyone, stay safe.